Episode 39, March the 15th, 2011. Spacecraft Operations. Hello and welcome to AstroTalk UK. ATUK is a not-for-profit amateur astronomy podcast produced by me, Gurbir Singh, an amateur astronomer based in the UK. For more information, see the About and FAQ pages at www.astrotalkuk.org. Since the launch of Sputnik 1 in 1957, thousands of unmanned spacecraft have been launched, mostly to Earth orbit, but many have gone to the inner and outer planets. Four of them have pretty much left the solar system altogether. European Space Agency's Mars Express arrived at Mars in 2003 and is still operating almost a decade later. It is operated by people in a profession initiated by the space age itself. Spacecraft operations engineers are the individuals who quietly take over the responsibility of the spacecraft after the nerve-wrenching excitement of launch is over. Thomas Ormston is a member of the spacecraft operations team that operates Mars Express, and in this episode describes the steps involved in controlling Mars Express from over 100 million miles away. The Hubble Space Telescope is the single instrument that has probably contributed more to science in the last decade than any other. Its success is not the size of its 2.4-meter mirror. There are many larger telescopes on Earth, but its location. Many amateur astronomers have taken images of Mars using a webcam. Such images are usually tiny, but with integration techniques, a surprising amount of surface detail is visible. What would it be like if you could put a webcam in Martian orbit? Thomas and his colleagues have done just that. Several ESA spacecraft have an attached visual monitoring camera, VMC, usually installed for a very specific purpose. Mars Express had one to monitor the release of Beagle 2. After that, it was switched off. Thomas describes the detail behind the project that reactivated the camera in a paper published online, and the fascinating video compiled from 600 images taken by the VMC webcam during a 7-hour Martian orbit on 27th of May 2010. It continues to take images, which are posted online.
My name's Thomas Ormston. I work for Vega Space GmbH. I'm a contractor at the European Space Agency's European Space Operations Centre. That's in Darmstadt in Germany.
And what do you do from there?
I'm part of the Mars Express flight control team, so I work with a team of other engineers on Europe's first Mars mission to make sure the spacecraft stays healthy, stays doing what it should be doing, and produces the great science that Europe expects from it.
So your team's responsible for all the downloads and the uplink to Mars Express, which is in orbit in Mars at the moment?
That's right, yes. We're responsible for everything to do with the spacecraft as a machine in orbit. So this starts with the generation of commands, which can be pushing the button to take a photograph, but they can also be all of what we call housekeeping, the daytime maintenance of the spacecraft and keeping it healthy. And then, of course, we get the data back, and we have to ensure that data comes back safely and securely and makes its way to the scientists so they've got something to work with.
Sounds an incredibly exciting job to be doing in the 21st century, but it must be scary at times too.
Yes, very much so, on both counts actually. It is very, very exciting. I mean, to think that when you're sat at a computer at work, what you're doing is talking to something that's millions of kilometres away around a different planet is tremendous, and to walk in the morning and see the control room looking like something out of the movies is really puts a smile on your face every day. There is some stress that goes with that, of course. This is a very expensive mission. It's a mission with a lot of people watching it, and it's a very delicate spacecraft in a very difficult environment to fly in. So there's a lot of stress that comes with that, but I think we probably would say it's more of an exciting challenge than a stress.
Mars Express arrived at Mars in 2003.
Yes.
Have you been involved with it since then?
I haven't actually, no. In 2003 I was a student at the University of Birmingham, and I was watching the launch on the news, and was thinking that this is such a great mission, it's an amazing mission that Europe's going to Mars and everything else, and it was a tremendous excitement a couple of years later to graduate and then start working for Vega at ESA, actually on the team of this mission I'd watched launch on the news a couple of years ago.
So how long have you been involved in your current role now?
I've been on Mars Express now for 5 years. I started my first year, I was on the European Space Agency's graduate program, and then following that I started my work with Vega. So it's been an exciting career so far, but I know I'm only just beginning and I still have a lot to learn.
Just take us through, when a scientist or astronomer wants, let's say, a picture of a particular part of Mars, a particular orbit, what's the process involved in from the request for that picture to that picture being available for that scientist?
There's quite a long process actually, and it can stretch out over, well, in the case of Mars Express, roughly 4 months from the first request being made. So they'll request the pictures along with other scientists that use the mission, will request other measurements, other operations to be done. And this all goes to a science operations centre. They have scientists that can evaluate these requests, and they also know, though, the technical limitations of the spacecraft, mm-hmm. and they try and harmonise these into a plan that the spacecraft can safely execute. It's often a bit like a jigsaw puzzle with too many pieces. There's a lot to fit in, and you have to do some fairly creative operations to fit all the different requests in and try and get the most possible out of the spacecraft. This then comes to us, and we then evaluate it again technically with our knowledge of how the spacecraft really works, checking that everything's safe, doing the maths behind these plans, just saying to point to the part of the planet, to point, say, the mountain Olympus Mons, it's not as simple as telling the spacecraft to go there. We have some of the best mathematicians in Europe working at ESOC in our flight dynamics, calculating these things and making sure it all happens safely. Then you get to the point where this is all done, you're all set, you've got command sequences, and the operations you've done, you'll have practiced, you'll have prepared them, you'll have written procedures that tell you exactly how each step is going to go, and you'll have trained on these procedures and simulated them to make sure that everything happens perfect, that it's second nature to you when you're actually doing it. The operation then gets done. In the case of Mars Express, the data is then stored on board until we get a chance to get a contact over either one of Europe's deep space stations or NASA's deep space stations, which can then send the data back down, and then that goes out over the internet to the scientists that requested it some 4 months after the first request goes in.
All right. So typically, how long would an image that's been taken by Mars Express be stored on Mars Express before it's transmitted to Earth?
Depends a lot on the size of the image, first of all. How big it is, of course, the bigger the image, the harder it is to get down. It also depends a bit on where Mars and the Earth are, because that decides how fast we can downlink. At the moment, Mars is on the far side of the Sun, on the far side of the solar system, so it's a very long way away. It takes us 20 minutes for the signal to travel one way. And to do this, we have to slow down our bit rate. It's like talking slower to try and get over the huge distance that we are away. So in that case, we've got a very limited capability, about 57 kilobits per second to downlink data.
Wow.
When we're close to the Earth, we can manage up to 228 kilobits, so of course you can get a lot more data down in the time you've got. So at the moment, maybe you have an image taken, it can wait even up to a week or so on board, mm-hmm. waiting for the time to downlink, or being downlinked in parts if it's particularly big, to fit into the ground station passes we have.
And you keep saying kilobits. Most of our home broadbands are megabits, so that's
absolutely
really slow.
Yeah, it's really quite slow, but for us it's very fast. 228 kilobits really feels like we're going some. But
and as Mars is today, on the other side of the Sun, are there times when it's just too close to the Sun for you to communicate with?
Absolutely, we've just gone through it. We call it conjunction, and at this period we have to preload the spacecraft with a month's worth of commands, because we know that for roughly a month around conjunction, the effect of the beam travelling past the sun and close to the sun, and the noise produced by the sun being seen by our antennas, that's going to cause us serious problems to communicate. First of all, we drop the bit rates to the lowest. Now we're talking down to about 200 bits per second, not even kilobits now, because again, you've got to talk really slow with that kind of interference. And even then, we know that the link is not guaranteed, and we saw it drop out many times during the last conjunction. So you have to let the spacecraft fend for itself for a month. We have to realise that we can't talk to it, because we could do more harm than good if we managed to get part of a command load done and not the rest.
And where are the ground stations in Europe for the deep space network?
We've actually only got one in Europe, which is Cebreros, not too far from Madrid in Spain. That's one of our 35-metre dishes. We've got another one in New Norcia in Australia, which is near Perth. And we've just started building one called Malargue in Argentina, in the high desert there, which is going to be our third station. The idea being that you want three stations positioned around the globe to give you constant coverage of deep space.
So at the moment you only have two, yes. And even with Europe, that's still, as far as European deep space network is concerned, probably a single point of failure, in the sense that if you lose that, then through Europe you don't have any connectivity. So is that in part why you used NASA?
No, I mean, NASA is more that, any mission will tell you they'll take all the ground station time they can get, so because it helps us get the data down. We're very confident that the stations won't go down. They have a lot of redundancy on the ground station to make sure that we can keep operating even through failures and issues with the station. But more than that, all spacecraft around the world, generally at least, apply a standard set known as CCSDS. It's a global committee that decides on the nuts and bolts, really, of downlinking data from spacecraft to make sure that our dishes are compatible with NASA or with JAXA, right, or with the Indian Space Agencies, that everybody's dishes are compatible with each other's. So if somebody needs emergency support, you don't have to do any kind of cross-calibration or anything. You know that your signal's going to work.
Makes sense. Mm-hmm. And just going back to the storage capacity on Mars Express, mm-hmm. What sort of memory capacity does it have? How much can it store?
We've got flash memory in three banks, which makes up a total of about 12 gigabits, wow, of data storage on board. So not big in modern computer terms, but plenty enough for us.
Now, I understand Mars Express has a webcam as well.
Yes, we do. Webcams, more properly known as the Visual Monitoring Camera, or VMC. We all call it the Mars Webcam. Right. It's a small camera, 640 by 480 colour camera, almost identical to your average PC webcam. And it was used to image the Beagle lander separation from the spacecraft, to check that the Beagle lander had separated and was on the right trajectory.
So that's the only purpose for it was installed?
That's the only purpose it was there for, was just monitoring the Beagle ejection. It was decided it was the best solution to monitor exactly where it had gone, in what direction, and everything else. And then it was shut down for some time. We had a primary science mission to do, we still do. But it was reactivated on the basis that it didn't interfere with our prime science mission in the slots that were too far from the planet or too disturbed by thruster firings for our science instruments to operate. We could turn on the VMC, the Mars webcam, and take pictures of Mars. And of course, they're nothing comparable to shots from high rise or shots from our own HRSC, but they give you almost a more real and more direct connection to Mars, because these things are taken by a very ordinary camera that just happens to be in an extraordinary location. And we provide those images and all the raw data that goes with them immediately on the web. So as soon as they hit ground from the spacecraft, of course they might have been stored for a while, like I mentioned, but as soon as they hit ground, we put them automatically on the web, so the people looking at the web page can be the first people to see these pictures of Mars. And they can download the data, they can work with these pictures, they can do things with them, enhance the images, pick out features, make artwork with them. We've had all sorts of submissions. Right. And then send that back to us, and we can put it up on the blog to show that they're really working with ESA, that it's not just a one-way street.
I understand you've got a video of the whole orbit.
We do. It was a very nice moment, and we're very grateful to the rest of the mission to have allotted one whole orbit for us to take images with the webcam. It takes 7 hours for us to go around Mars, and we're in a very elliptical orbit. So we start very high out, about 11,000 kilometres, and come into about 300 kilometres. And so we took one picture every minute, that's as fast as it can image, all the way through this whole 7 hour orbit. And you see us flying in over the mountains, the great volcanoes of Mars. Mm-hmm. Then we go over the night side, coming out low down and fast over the North Pole, and then climb back up away from the planet. You see the planet spinning in the movie, and you see the track of Phobos as Phobos passes between Mars and the camera, so you see the small shadow flit across the image towards the end. So
there's nothing better that illustrates the orbit of Mars Express than that very short.
Absolutely. Oh, it absolutely does. You really see the Kepler's laws work. You see us speed up as we come in towards the planet, and then slow down as we climb back up away towards our epicenter. So it's very exciting.
What is the web address for this?
You can find it all at www.esa.int/VMC, VMC in small letters. So that will take you to the Mars Webcam blog, where you'll see the new images updating. And if you want to submit your own images, we're more than happy to put them up there on the blog as well. And there's a link as well on that blog to the movie itself and to all the raw images. We don't claim to be video processing experts. If someone can make a better video of the movie than we did, then we'd love to see it and we'd love to publish it.
And finally, Tom, Mars Express has been there now for over 8 years. Mm-hmm. How much future life has it got?
Well, we're confident that technically we can keep the spacecraft flying for quite a long time. We're constantly looking at new ways to improve its lifetime and new ways to check that the spacecraft is healthy and to spot problems that might come up and correct them ahead of time. At the moment, we're funded until 2012, the end of 2012. We've got operations until, and then after that we get reviewed by the European Space Agency on our scientific merit and, of course, our technical ability, whether we can technically carry on flying. And we're confident that the work we do at ESOC means the spacecraft will stay healthy and stay flying as long as people want it to.
Well, I know in your care it's done a great job, and my thanks to you and your team for doing that for such a long time. And thanks very much for your time.
Just no problem. Thank you very much.
Today's quote from John Lennon is about the critical importance of the role of human understanding in interpreting the real world, even when you have all the evidence you could possibly desire. Reality leaves a lot to the imagination.